So soon as the road to divorce began to be made smooth by law, at once quarrels, jealousies, and judicial separations largely increased, and such shamelessness of life followed that men had been in favor of these divorces repented of what they had done, and feared that, if they did not carefully seek a remedy by repealing the law, the state itself might come to ruin. The Romans of old are said to have shrunk with horror from the first example of divorce, but ere long all sense of decency was blunted in their soul, the meager restraint of passion died out, and the marriage vow was so often broken that what some writers have affirmed would seem to be true, namely, women used to reckon years not by the change of consuls, but of their husbands. In like manner, at the beginning, Protestants allowed legalized divorces in certain, although but few cases, and yet from the affinity of circumstances of like kind, the number of divorces increased to such extent in Germany, America, and elsewhere that all wise thinkers deplored the boundless corruption of morals, and judged the recklessness of the laws to be simply intolerable. 31. Even in Catholic states the evil existed. For whenever at any time divorce was introduced, the abundance of misery that followed far exceeded all that the framers of the law could have foreseen. In fact, many lent their minds to contrive all kinds of fraud and device, and by accusations of cruelty, violence, and adultery to feign grounds for the dissolution of the matrimonial bond of which they had grown weary, and all this with so great havoc to morals that an amendment of the laws was deemed to be urgently needed. 32. Canon 1, therefore, doubt that laws in favor of divorce would have a result equally baneful and calamitous were they to be passed in these our days. There exists not, indeed, in the projects and enactments of men any power to change the character and tendency which things have received from nature. Those men, therefore, show but little wisdom in the idea they have formed of the well-being of the commonwealth think that the inherent character of marriage can be perverted with impunity, and, disregarding the sanctity of religion and of the sacrament, seem to wish to degrade and dishonor marriage more basely than was done even by heathen laws. Indeed, if they do not change their views, not only private families, but all public society, will have unceasing cause to fear lest they should be miserably driven into that general confusion and overthrow of order which is even now the wicked aim of socialists and communists. Thus we see most clearly how foolish and senseless it is to expect any public good from divorce, when, on the contrary, it tends to the certain destruction of society. 33. It must consequently be acknowledged that the Church has deserved exceedingly well of all nations by her ever watchful care in guarding the sanctity and the indissolubility of marriage. Again, no small amount of gratitude is owing to her for having, during the last 100 years, openly denounced the wicked laws which have grievously offended on this particular subject. 51. As well as for her having branded with anathema the baneful heresy obtaining among Protestants touching divorce and separation. 52. Also, for having in many ways condemned the habitual dissolution of marriage among the Greeks. 53. For having declared invalid all marriages contracted upon the understanding that they may be at some future time dissolved. 54. And, lastly, for having, from the earliest times, repudiated the imperial laws which disastrously favor divorce. 55. 34. As often, indeed, as the supreme pontiffs have resisted the most powerful among rulers in their threatening demands that divorces carried out by them should be confirmed by the Church, so often must we account them to have been contending for the safety, not only of religion, but also of the human race. For this reason all generations of men will admire the proofs of unbending courage which are to be found in the decrees of Nicholas I against Lothair, of Urban II and Paschal II against Philip I of France, of Celestine III and Innocent III against Alphonsus of Leon and Philip II of France, of Clement VII and Paul III against Henry VIII, and, lastly, of Pius VII, that holy and courageous pontiff, against Napoleon I, when at the height of his prosperity, and in the fullness of his power. This being so, all rulers and administrators of the state are desirous of following the dictates of reason and wisdom, and anxious for the good of their people, ought to make up their minds to keep the holy laws of marriage intact, and to make use of the proffered aid of the Church for securing the safety of morals and the happiness of families, rather than suspect her of hostile intention, and falsely and wickedly accuse her of violating the civil law. 35. They should do this the more readily, because the Catholic Church, though powerless in any way to abandon the duties of her office or the defense of her authority, still very greatly inclines to kindness and indulgence whenever they are consistent with the safety of her rights and the sanctity of her duties. Wherefore she makes no decrees in relation to marriage without having regard to the state of the body politic and the condition of the general public, and has besides more than once mitigated, as far as possible, the enactments of her own laws when there were just and weighty reasons. Moreover, she is not unaware, and never calls in doubt, that the sacrament of marriage, being instituted for the preservation and increase of the human race, has necessary relation to circumstances of life which, though connected with marriage, belong to the civil order, and about which the state rightly makes strict inquiry and justly promulgates decrees. 36. Yet, no one doubts that Jesus Christ, the founder of the Church, willed her sacred power to be distinct from the civil power, and each power to be free and unshackled in its own sphere, with this condition, however, a condition good for both and of advantage to all men, that union and concord should be maintained between them, and that on those questions which are, though in different ways, of common right and authority, the power to which secular matters have been entrusted should happily and becomingly depend on the other power which has in its charge the interests of heaven. In such arrangement and harmony is found not only the best line of action for each power, but also the most opportune and efficacious method of helping men in all that pertains to their life here and to their hope of salvation hereafter. For, as we have shown in former encyclical letters, 56, the intellect of man is greatly ennobled by the Christian faith and made better able to shun and banish all error, while faith borrows in turn no little help from the intellect, and in like manner, when the civil power is on friendly terms with the sacred authority of the Church, there accrues to both a great increase of usefulness. The dignity of the one is exalted, and so long as religion is its guide it will never rule unjustly, while the other receives help of protection and defense for the public good of the faithful. 37. Being moved, therefore, by these considerations, as we have exhorted rulers at other times, so still more earnestly we exhort them now, to concord and friendly feeling, and we are the first to stretch out our hand to them with fatherly benevolence, and to offer to them the help of our supreme authority, a help which is the more necessary at this time, when, in public opinion, the authority of rulers is wounded and enfeebled, now that the minds of so many are inflamed with a reckless spirit of liberty, and men are wickedly endeavoring to get rid of every restraint of authority, however legitimate it may be. The public safety demands that both powers should unite their strength to avert the evils which are hanging, not only over the Church, but also over civil society. 38. But, while earnestly exhorting all to a friendly union of will, and beseeching God, the Prince of Peace, to infuse a love of concord into all hearts, we cannot, venerable brothers, refrain from urging you more and more to fresh earnestness, and zeal, and watchfulness, though we know that these are already very great. With every effort and with all authority, strive, as much as you are able, to preserve whole and undefiled among the people committed to your charge the doctrine which Christ our Lord taught us, which the apostles, the interpreters of the will of God, have handed down, and which the Catholic Church has herself scrupulously guarded and commanded to be believed in all ages by the faithful of Christ. 39. Let special care be taken that the people be well instructed in the precepts of Christian wisdom, so that they may always remember that marriage was not instituted by the will of man, but, from the very beginning, by the authority and command of God, that it does not admit of plurality of wives or husbands, that Christ, the author of the new covenant, raised it from a right of nature to be a sacrament, and gave to his Church legislative and judicial power with regard to the bond of union. On this point the very greatest care must be taken to instruct them, lest their minds should be led into error by the unsound conclusions of adversaries' desire that the Church should be deprived of that power. 40. In like manner, all ought to understand clearly that, if there be any union of a man and a woman among the faithful of Christ which is not a sacrament, such union has not the force and nature of a proper marriage, that, although contracted in accordance with the laws of the state, it cannot be more than a right or custom introduced by the civil law. Further, the civil law can deal with and decide those matters alone which in the civil order spring from marriage, and which cannot possibly exist, as is evident, unless there be a true and lawful cause of them, that is to say, the nuptial bond. It is of the greatest consequence to husband and wife that all these things should be known and well understood by them, in order that they may conform to the laws of the state, if there be no objection on the part of the Church, for the Church wishes the effects of marriage to be guarded in all possible ways, and that no harm may come to the children. 41. In the great confusion of opinions, however, which day by day is spreading more and more widely, it should further be known that no power can dissolve the bond of Christian marriage whenever this has been ratified and consummated, and that, of a consequence, those husbands and wives are guilty of a manifest crime plan, for whatever reason, to be united in a second marriage before the first one has been ended by death, when, indeed, matters have come to such a pitch that it seems impossible for them to live together any longer than the Church allows them to live apart and strives at the same time to soften the evils of the separation by such remedies and helps as are suited to their condition. Yet she never ceases to endeavor to bring about to reconciliation, and never despairs of doing so. But these are extreme cases, and they would seldom exist if men and women entered into the married state with proper dispositions, not influenced by passion, but entertaining right ideas of the duties of marriage, and of its noble purpose. Neither would they anticipate their marriage by a series of sins drawing down upon them the wrath of God. 42. To sum up all in a few words, there would be a calm and quiet constancy in marriage if married people would gather strength and life from the virtue of religion alone, which imparts to us resolution and fortitude, for religion would enable them to bear tranquilly and even gladly the trials of their state, such as, for instance, the faults that they discover in one another, the difference of temper and character, the weight of a mother's cares, the wearing anxiety about the education of children, reverses of fortune, and the sorrows of life. 43. Care also must be taken that they do not easily enter into marriage with those who are not Catholics, for, when minds do not agree as to the observances of religion, it is scarcely possible to hope for agreement in other things. Other reasons also proving that persons should turn with dread from such marriages are chiefly these, that they give occasion to forbidden association and communion in religious matters, endanger the faith of the Catholic partner, are a hindrance to the proper education of the children, and often lead to a mixing up of truth and falsehood, and to the belief that all religions are equally good. 44. Lastly, since we well know that none should be excluded from our charity, we commend, venerable brothers, to your fidelity and piety those unhappy persons, carried away by the heat of passion, and being utterly indifferent to their salvation, live wickedly together without the bond of lawful marriage. Let your utmost care be exercised in bringing such persons back to their duty, and, both by your own efforts, and by those of good men will consent to help you, strive by every means, that they may see how wrongly they have acted, that they may do penance, and that they may be induced to enter into a lawful marriage according to the Catholic rite. 45. You will at once see, venerable brothers, that the doctrine and precepts in relation to Christian marriage, which we have thought good to communicate to you in this letter, tend no less to the preservation of civil society than to the everlasting salvation of souls. May God grant that, by reason of their gravity and importance, minds may everywhere be found docile and ready to obey them. For this end let us all suppliantly, with humble prayer, implore the help of the blessed and immaculate Virgin Mary, that, our hearts being quickened to the obedience of faith, she may show herself our mother and our helper. With equal earnestness let us ask the princes of the apostles, Peter and Paul, the destroyers of heresies, the sowers of the seed of truth, to save the human race by their powerful patronage from the deluge of errors that is surging afresh. In the meantime, as an earnest of heavenly gifts and a testimony of our special benevolence, we grant to you all, venerable brothers, and to the people confided to your charge from the depths of our heart, the apostolic benediction. Given at St. Peter's in Rome, the 10th day of February, 1880, the third year of our pontificate. Leo XIII.